Welcome to 70s Beatles.
I'm Kate.
And I'm Scott. On this podcast, we usually take a solo album from each of the former Beatles, and then taking turns, we each pick songs and try and earn the biggest increases in Spotify plays to outdo each other.
However, starting in 1976, John Lennon began a sabbatical from releasing albums that lasted nearly 5 years. Since we don't have any released music from Lennon to draw upon, we're taking a break from compiling those theoretical, hypothetical, what if the Beatles stayed together albums. Instead, we will be focusing on the music that George and Ringo released between 1976 through 1979 in this episode.
Released on September 7th in 1976, Ringo's first album after the end of the Beatles' EMI Capitol contract was a record for Atlantic and Polydor, produced by Arif Martin, entitled Ringo's Rotogravure. The album went to number 28 in the US Billboard 200, but did not go gold.
The album attempted to replicate the formula of 1973's Ringo album by having lots of guest stars, including contributions from all three of Ringo's former Beatle bandmates. While John brought in Cookin' in the Kitchen of Love, and Paul gave Ringo the song Pure Gold, George declined to participate. Nevertheless, Ringo recorded the unfinished All Things Must Pass outtake I Still Love You, giving many the erroneous impression that all three former Fabs had reunited once again to help out their old pal Ringo. George was so miffed by this deception that he actually sued Ringo over the song, although the case was settled amicably enough out of court.
Two singles were released from the album, A Dose of Rock and Roll and Hey Baby. A Dose of Rock and Roll was written by Carl Grossman and went to number 26 on the Billboard Hot 100. The song features Peter Frampton on guitar, Dr. John on piano, and Klaus Voormann on bass. The B-side was Cryin', a country song written by Ringo and his writing partner at the time, Vinnie Poncia. The second single, Hey Baby, is a cover of the 1961 song by Bruce Channell, or Channel, I'm not sure. Ringo's version only reached number 74 on the charts and was backed by the song Lady Gay, which was written by Ringo and Vinnie again, but it was based on the song Birmingham by Clifford T. Ward, so he got a songwriting credit as well. So have you listened to Ringo's Rotogravure?
Yes, I did. I listened through it, and I actually really like this. I think this is one of my upper ones for like all of the Ringo albums and singles that we've covered so far. I do especially like the singles, A Dose of Rock and Roll and Hey Baby. I thought they were fun. Hey Baby is it's not a cover, but is it like heavily sampled from something else, or is the song that I'm thinking from sampled from this?
It's probably sampled from either Ringo's version or the Bruce Channel version, or it's just one of those oldie standards that everyone, you know, every bar band covers, so you've probably heard it a million times.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that George sued Ringo over the best song, or at least my favorite song on the album, but
yeah, that's funny that they all kind of like didn't come together, but they're all sort of involved. And it's also funny to me that George was the one who was being the mitigating factor in this, because I feel like in the previous albums we've talked about, it's always been John, you know, or Paul. They're all kind of like, they've been intermingling. So I think this is the first time I feel like George was not happy about being in, which is interesting.
Yeah, no, and John, you know, who had, you know, put out this statement and had declared that he wasn't going to record anymore. This is like the only thing he did. Was the rather, not terribly complicated or interesting, but he played piano and did, you know, Cookin' in the Kitchen of Love, which is, The Ringo album, it felt like John and Paul and George wrote songs for Ringo. This one, they were given leftovers, that outtakes and stuff they couldn't use. So, yeah, Cookin' in the Kitchen of Love, not a great song. But it's a of the three Ringo albums we're going to talk about, it's the best.
Really. It's worth a listen for sure.
Yeah. No, I mean, Ringo, the original 73 album's great. Goodnight Vienna is a poor copy of Ringo, and Ringo's Rotogravure is a poor copy of that poor copy. So that's. Now, the real question is, have you ever used the word Rotogravure before?
No. What does that mean?
It's another word for record, apparently. It's only been like. The only time I can find it ever being used, it was in the 1930 film Meet Me in St. Louis with Judy Garland for some reason that's where it came from, and it never caught on, but Ringo decided to use it for this album.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm glad that you cleared that up, because I was wondering.
Yeah, I'm not even sure we're pronouncing it right, but I'm going with it.
Close enough. Okay, moving into this one I'm very excited for. On November 19th, 1976, George released 33 and a Third, when George himself was 33 and a Third years old. The album, George's first on his new label, Dark Horse Records, came out just 11 days after Capitol and Parlophone released The Best of George Harrison. To add insult to injury, that compilation featured one side of George's Beatles songs, implying that George didn't have enough solo material worthy enough to fill up an entire album. 33 and a Third went to number 11 on the US Billboard charts and was certified gold. You want to take us through the track list?
Okay, just for those who haven't listened to it in a while, side one starts with Woman, Don't You Cry For Me, which was actually a leftover from All Things Must Pass. Followed by Dear One, then Beautiful Girl, another song left off of All Things Must Pass. This song, which was released as the first single, and See Yourself. On side two, we have It's What You Value, followed by True Love, which is a cover of a Cole Porter standard. Pure Smokey, Cracker Box Palace, which was the second single from the album, and Learning How to Love You. Interesting thing about 33 and a Third, it may be the first George album that was better than the one before it. Doesn't have that going for it. I mean, after Extra Texture, it'd be hard to do worse, but we appreciate it.
Yes. It wasn't that much of a, you know, chasm to overcome, but this is truly like a phenomenal album. It is a top one for me. It feels like a return to form for George. The standout tracks for me is I love like Cracker Box Palace, which is the single, so fun, awesome, and actually premiered with, this is like prior to MTV, they made like a music video for it that actually premiered on SNL.
Yeah.
And this song, which was written about the case, the lawsuit case against...
My Sweet Lord, yeah.
Yes, yeah. So it was written about like the lawsuit that was happening against that song, which eventually was settled, where like George was accused is probably the wrong word, but accused of subconscious plagiarism, which is funny that exists. And then I also love the opening track, Woman Don't You Cry For Me, has a killer bass line. They had Willie Weeks on bass all over this album, who was like a 70s funk bass master. And there's actually like kind of a lot of disco bass on this album, like they play a lot of like the octaves, the like dunna dunna dunna, which is just, it's fun. It's not a disco record by any means, and I actually like, I'm not a fan of disco, but I'm such a fan of the bass that is all over this album. It's really fun.
I really love Woman Don't You Cry For Me. That was always my favorite when I first got the album a gazillion years ago. But yeah, no, this album does not get a lot of attention or love, and I think it gets slept on. I'm not sure if it's, well, maybe, I think, yeah, it's probably better than Living in the Material World. It's really better than anything George had done up to this point, other than All Things Must Pass. I think the most important thing is George sounds like he's having fun. He actually wants to be recording for the first time in a long time, which makes a big difference on this album.
He also, I think at this like time period, because we talked about like the things that were going on in his life when he did Extra Texture, and like he was going through the divorce and like coming off of like that Dark Horse tour, which was awful. He had met Olivia, who would become his future wife, and like he's starting the Dark Horse record project, so he's like a little bit more revitalized, I think, and you hear it on here.
Yeah, there's a lot of his sense of humor's all over this too. I mean, he not only did he do that goofy video with like the Monty Python guys, but he did a lot of publicity for this album. He was like kidding around with Gerald Ford, and he did that SNL show where John and Paul nearly showed up, and it was a good, if you know, after several years of darkness, it's good to hear George back on top of things.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, moving on, released on September 20th, 1977, Ringo the Fourth is ironically Ringo's sixth solo album, although it is his fourth since 1973's Ringo, so I guess Sentimental Journey and Bukus of Blues don't count. The album only went to 162 on the Billboard 200 and was not certified gold or anything. The album was again produced by Arif Martin and released on Atlantic Polydor. However, it deviates from its predecessor by not being as reliant on guest stars as most of Ringo's discography was at this point. Rather, this album focuses on Ringo's songwriting with Vinnie Poncia and features a distinctively disco feel.
There were two singles released from the album, Wings and Drowning in the Sea of Love. While the song Wings, no relation to Paul McCartney's band, only went to number 119 on the U.S. Cashbox, Ringo did re-record for this 2012 album, creatively titled Ringo 2012. The B-side is a non-album track, Just a Dream. It's all just a dream. It's all just a dream. Now I have to face it. It still has not been released on CD or on streaming. While both sides of the first single were written by Ringo and Vinnie Poncia, the second song released as a single was Drowning in the Sea of Love, a cover of the 1971 Joe Simon song. The single did not chart and also featured Just a Dream as the B-side.
While doing research for this album, I was looking up Vinnie Poncia. Here's an odd bit of trivia for you. One of the first songs Vinnie Poncia ever got recorded was something he co-wrote with Phil Spector.
Oh.
And it was a Beatlemania novelty song called Ringo, I Love You. Ringo, I love you, yeah, yeah, yeah. More than anything in this world, I wanna be your own Ringo. Please let me hold you, Ringo. They say, yeah, yeah, yeah.
No way.
It gets weirder. The song was recorded by Bobby Joe Mason. This was Bobby Joe's first and only record. When she recorded again, she used a different stage name, and that was Cher.
No way!
Yeah, Cher's first single is co-written by Ringo's songwriting partner, is about Ringo, is produced by, you know, the guy who produced Let It Be. It is, yeah, very bizarre.
That's nuts!
Yeah, he also went on to produce a lot of records for Kiss and Linda Carter, the TV's Wonder Woman. He's an interesting fellow.
Yeah, I don't see any, like, trend in there. Like,
no, he will just show up wherever you hire him. Yes, he's that kind of guy. But
yeah.
Interesting, yeah, resume on that guy. So what do you think of Ringo the Fourth?
I don't know much about it other than the album cover is very odd. I've listened to the singles and they're okay. I don't really feel super strongly about them. I think it's funny that he released a song called Wings,
yeah,
with no relation to Paul McCartney's band. I just kind of wonder, you know, what he was,
was he
cause thinking? Like, obviously people are going to draw that connection. So I don't know. I don't have major thoughts or feelings.
Yeah. I mean, it gets derided often as Ringo's disco record, and there are a number of, like, danceable Ringo disco tunes on there, but it's not nearly as bad as its reputation suggests, but I don't know. It's no Ringo's rotogravure, which is not saying much.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But it is definitely better than the next album, which was released on April 21st, 1978. It's his final album for Polydor. It's called Bad Boy. Now, this album was produced by Vinnie Poncia, but only has like two songs on there co-written by him and Ringo. And this album did even worse. It only reached 129 on the Billboard 200, which is disappointing because it featured, part of the promotion for it was a primetime TV special, which they called Ringo.
Ringo, with a little help from his friends. Art Carney. Angie Dickinson, Mike Douglas, Carrie Fisher, Vincent Price, and John Ritter. Ringo is being brought to you with the best wishes of your local Craig dealer and the Craig Corporation, America's leader in fine car stereo equipment.
I don't know if you've watched this, but it's available on YouTube. It's got, like, Carrie Fisher and Art Carney and John Ritter, and Ringo plays both himself and this, like, down on his luck doppelganger named Ogner Ratz. That's just Ringo spelled backwards, and it's very 70s. Worth checking out. George makes a very brief cameo in the beginning, and he has this, like, poodle perm going on. It is just everything that Magical Mystery Tour wasn't, this TV special is.
Okay, I'll have to check it out. What is the, like, structure of the TV special? Is it like he's playing through the album, or is it like skits?
It's like a mini movie, you know. Ringo wants to take some time off, so he meets this guy who sells maps to stars' homes, who looks just like him, so he tries to convince this guy to pretend to be him so he can, you know, get out of the limelight for a little bit, and there are little musical sketches in between, and in the end, Ringo makes it in the end to perform, like, three songs, but there's, like, a music video where Ringo's singing You're 16 to Carrie Fisher, who clearly is not 16 at that point. And
right.
Yeah, because this was, like, right around Star Wars, too, so it is
okay.
Very strange. And, you know, there's all these, like, guest stars, and Ringo's playing a clear glass or plastic drum kit at the very end, and it's nothing about it matches the album, because the special, not good, but very interesting. The album is super boring.
Yeah. Well, there were two singles released from this album as well. Lipstick Traces on a Cigarette and Heart on My Sleeve. Lipstick Traces is a cover of a 1962 Benny Spellman song written by Alan Toussaint and features the Ringo Starr / Vinnie Poncia collaboration of Old Time Relevin on the B-side. The second single released was Heart on My Sleeve, a cover of a Gallagher and Lyle song from 1976, and featured the only other Ringo and Vinnie song, Who Needs a Heart, as its B-side. Neither single charted. After this album flopped, Ringo was dropped by Polydor and did not release another album for 3 years.
Yeah, this was not a good time for Ringo, and things did turn around for him eventually, but, you know, this is where he was dating Nancy Andrews, I believe her name was. That did not work out. This is before he met his current wife, Barbara Bach, on the set of Caveman, which, different sort of embarrassing, which I don't think we're going to get into.
But... yeah, not yet, anyway.
No.
Yeah. I mean, he's been extremely prolific. Like, in this kind of, like, time period that we're covering in between John albums, he's got... George has two, he has three, Wings has... Two or three?
Wings has three, too, and we'll get to them in the next episode.
Okay.
Because, yeah, we don't want to delve too much on the Ringo albums, but Ringo took, like, 3 years off after this album, while George took 3 years off after 33 and a Third, primarily because he was just having a good time. I think his son Danny was born around this time. He had just gotten married. He just wasn't as interested. So he released his next record, the eponymous George Harrison album, on February 14th, 1979. It went to number 14 on the U.S. Billboard charts and was certified gold.
The album was co-produced by Russ Titelman, the first time he had worked with an outside producer since Phil Spector co-produced All Things Must Pass in 1970.
A brief rundown of the album. Side one opens with Love Comes to Everyone, which was the second single. It's followed by Not Guilty, which was a re-recording of the song that he originally wrote in India in 1968 and was recorded for the White Album, but didn't make the cut. Then there's another Beatles tie-in with Here Comes the Moon, followed by Soft-Hearted Hannah and Blow Away, the first single from the album. On side two, it starts with Faster, which was the third single, Dark Sweet Lady, Your Love is Forever, Soft Touch, and it ends with If You Believe, which George co-wrote with Gary Wright, the Dreamweaver himself. So, how do you feel about the George Harrison album in general?
I, in general, really like this album. I think it's no, like, 33 and a Third, All Things Must Pass, or Living in the Material World, but there are definitely some good moments in here. Blow Away, the single, is a phenomenal song. Definitely up there with his... the tracks that everyone likes and the more popular tracks. Like, this is, people know, I think people who know George Harrison know this song. And there's other like really good ones in there. Dark Sweet Lady is beautiful. Not Guilty is nice. The opener for Side 2, Faster, has like a fun story behind it because he was getting very involved with Formula One racing. It was just something that he was into. So he became friends with all the like Formula One racers. And this song was kind of written as a tribute to them. And apparently it was originally going to be the title of the album. He was going to call the album Faster. And if you have the album on vinyl, it's very much like Formula One. There's pictures of him with the racers, and you can tell that that's like what he was very into at the time. But I think my guess as to the reason why he didn't end up doing that is because it doesn't really match the rest of the album. It's kind of, you know, they're a little more like mellow, but in a good way, not in kind of like a morose, sad way like Extra Texture was. And then Here Comes the Moon is another really good track, kind of like a follow-up to, Here Comes the Sun, but it is like a decent song. My main issue with this album is I feel like the track order, it makes things like a little bit lost after, and there's just some sections where I would just like to restructure this, which we do in our drafting episode. So this would have been kind of fun to play around with. But I think that it gets a little bit lost in Side 2 a little bit. I would have liked it to have concluded with something like Faster or even Blow Away.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's ironic that he nearly called it Faster because the album is a lot slower, particularly, yeah, as you say,
right,
the second half of Side 2 from Dark Sweet Lady on is, I mean, they're all good, but they are kind of interchangeable. I mean,
yeah,
Not Guilty stands out because you know the story behind it, and even though it doesn't really sound like the White Album version until, you know, if you didn't have a bootleg, until the anthology came out, this was all you had. And Soft-Hearted Hannah has that weird, goofy, very speed thing going on. Like, it sounds like the record's warped. Here Comes the Moon. You wouldn't expect George to keep writing sequel songs, but after This Guitar Can't Keep From Crying, apparently he...
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's some good... The singles off the album are great, but, yeah, I think it's a little front-loaded and it gets a little lost. And also, Russ Titelman's production is very... like jazz rock, very almost yacht rock on here. It's it's smooth. It's that might be part of why the songs tend to run together when they're slower, because there's not a lot that sticks out on them. But it's a good album. I think it, again, not as good as 33 and a third, but
yeah, it definitely holds up. And it's interesting that you mentioned kind of like the yacht rock feel, because this was very much yacht rock time, like during the late 70s, like 76 to 79, there were kind of two very distinct music factions, and there was punk, and then there was like yacht rock, like the opposite of punk, where everything was very clean, very polished, things like Toto Records and stuff like that. And I think that this is certainly influenced by the yacht rock kind of like clean, polished production studio sound.
It does sound like that a lot. And I think it's odd because
yeah,
in 1979, Paul also was working with an outside producer or co-producer for the first time. And he was trying very hard to get more into the punk sound than the yacht rock sound. He failed completely, but Back to the Egg is a very interesting companion piece to George Harrison. And it's too bad that we don't really have a chance to sort of line them up one-to-one, because it's really the only comparison you have. And I think the two would have worked well together, but we don't have any John to really fill that out with.
Yeah, it would have been cool to see them together. While John stepped away completely, George certainly scaled back his output during the 76-79 period. However, as we have glossed over, Paul McCartney and Wings were working hard as ever. So, Scott, you want to give a preview of our next episode?
So, the next episode, we will watch the, you know, ascendancy and then final crash of Wings as They reach new heights with Wings at the Speed of Sound, then once again fall apart completely with Wings London Town, and then once again try and reconstitute themselves with Back to the Egg before finally realizing that, you know, Wings is, you know, as much of a band as Plastic Ono Band, which it's just, you know, John or Paul with whoever and his wife. So
yeah,
he stopped pretending. I think a lot of that also, you know, the drug bust in Japan may have encouraged him to stop doing Wings, and I think he was just sick of it. But we'll get more into the whole Paul McCartney and Wings in the last half of the 70s in our next episode. So Definitely you want to stay tuned for that. Be sure to smash that subscribe button. It's the only way it works is if it's smashed. If you just press it, it doesn't work at all.
Yeah, and speaking again, from experience.
Happy New Year. This will be coming out after the first of the year, so congratulations. We made it one whole year on the podcast. This is lucky episode 13.
Yeah.
We'll discuss Paul and Wings next, and we look forward to hearing from you then.
Yes, thank you for joining us. See you next time.